This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Dungeon's Burden by Jeffrey Falcon Logue. Narrated by Ryan Turner. Prologue.
Run! Get those people to safety!
Ken ordered as his men rushed to protect the fleeing citizens of Durin. Ahead, demon minions and fleshlings ran toward them, screaming so horribly that all who heard it winced. Anyone caught by them disappeared in a cloud of red gore.
"Sir, there are too many!"
one of the guard lieutenants cried out in fear. Ken cursed. There were too many to defeat now.
"Retreat to the palace!"
he cried out.
"Save as many as you can! Get the gates ready to be sealed!"
Ken and his men rushed after the citizens toward the palace. All around them in the fading light, people screamed and cried as monsters slaughtered their way through the crowds. With the church having fallen and the adventurers all but gone to the dungeon town, there was no one left who could put up a fight against the creatures. Displaced fires had begun to spread as well.
"We can't win this fight. We can only flee to fight another day," Ken said regretfully, watching his city burn. "If only we hadn't sent off the army."
A hand got his attention. Ken turned to look at one of his most veteran soldiers.
"Sir, we can outrun the monsters, but the citizens cannot. If we leave now, many will die."
Ken bit his lip till blood ran out.
"Dave, I can't."
The old soldier smiled resolutely.
"You don't have to, sir. My men and I have decided to go against your orders and hold the line. Save as many as you can, Prince Kenneth."
He turned back and raised his sword high into the air.
"For Durin, men!"
Ken watched in tears as his rangers ran back toward the horde of monsters.
"Guards, push the people toward the palace! Carry the wounded!"
Ken roared as he reached down and scooped up a little girl and her brother. The men, now his, followed suit, helping anyone they could reach. When Ken reached the palace doors, he set the kids down, who ran to their crying mother. He turned and began to call,
"Run! Hurry here! Get inside!"
As the remaining stragglers made it through the doors, Ken watched the last of the rangers fall to the horde. The mob surged forward, engulfing all the unlucky citizens who failed to flee in time. They screamed at Ken, begging him to keep the door open. With regret in his heart, he shut his eyes and sealed the gates. He listened to fists beating against the door, voices pleading for the gate to open, children crying. And then, screams of pain and roars of evil as the slaughter began. Ken turned and ran as the monsters began to hammer the door. It wouldn't last forever. Upon entering the throne room, Ken met a wounded and grim Leo.
"The rangers acted honorably," Leo said comfortingly. "Their souls will reach the three heavens."
"Small comfort," Ken said softly. "But we are still here, and we need to escape. Leo, have you located my mother?"
"She is with your sisters in the dining hall. Go to them. They think you died," Leo informed him.
Ken hurried into the large dining room, now being used as an emergency healing hall. There, he found his mother and younger sisters. Upon seeing him, Shiva and Hilda burst into tears and tackled him in a hug. Queen Nia also embraced him with tears in her eyes.
"I'm so happy you are alive,"
she whispered to him, using her magic voice stone.
"I'm alive, but my men..."
Ken broke off. Queen Nia slapped him, startling the three kids.
"Don't let their sacrifices be in vain," she scolded him. "We must evacuate our people through the emergency tunnels. Shiva, Hilda, go with your brother and lead our people to safety."
"But, Mother, what about you?"
Shiva asked quickly. Queen Nia shook her head.
I must stay here and ensure no one can follow you. I will collapse the entrance and set this place aflame.
You can't, Hilda begged. We can't lose you too.
Nia smiled warmly and embraced her three children.
I'm sorry, my dears, but it must be done. If I collapse the tunnels from within, the smoke from my flames would be unable to escape, and we would all perish from inhaling it. The entrance was not meant to be destroyed, so it will take my hottest fire to melt it into rubble. Once that happens, they will be unable to follow you.
But that means you would be trapped as well.
Is there nothing we can do?
Ken asked softly.
You can leave, son. I will stay with your mother, a voice boomed across the hall.
Your Highness!
People scrambled to bow. King Durin walked confidently across the hall to his family, his former power and radiance emanating out of his weakened body. Queen Nia teared up as she embraced her husband.
You're awake, she whispered.
I'm sorry I was gone for so long, King Durin apologized. I've placed quite the burden on you and our children. Allow me to make it up by staying with you till the end.
King Durin turned to look at his children.
Kenneth, he ordered, take command of every guard and able-bodied man here. Lead the people and your sisters through the tunnels to safety. When you get above ground, lead them toward the dungeon town and regroup with your brother. Here, take this emergency messenger bird and send him word. Shiva and Hilda, go with your brother and survive. Leave this to us who have lived full lives.
Shiva and Hilda cried profusely, but they nodded their heads at King Durin's command. Ken saluted him, holding back the tears in his eyes.
Yes, Your Highness, Ken replied.
He hurried out of the room and yelled,
Men, gather the people and follow me. We make for the tunnels. Anyone who wishes to stay and fight with the king and queen may do so.
Queen Nia smiled as she held her husband's hand.
One last adventure, my love, she asked.
Durin pulled her into a deep kiss before releasing her. He smiled down.
Together forever.
The building shook as the magic wards began to falter from the attack of the enemy. King Durin walked into the throne room and pulled a hidden lever on the throne. An opening appeared in the back corner of the hall, leading into darkness. Gannis and Wendell, the two surviving members of the council, walked up to the king and bowed.
Allow us to stay, Your Highness, they begged.
King Durin raised an eyebrow and laughed.
I expected Gannis to ask, but you, Wendell, aren't you a horrible coward?
Wendell chuckled.
How could you say that, Your Highness? I...
King Durin did not hesitate as he slashed Wendell into two halves. No one screamed, as they were all deadened to such sights.
You didn't think I realized you were the traitor?
King Durin kicked Wendell's body.
You always wanted more.
He turned to Gannis.
Old friend, I need you to go with my son. Your experience in both magic and politics will be needed to keep them safe. Teach magic to those who are able, please.
All right,
Gannis agreed reluctantly.
I will go, but I will not keep you waiting. Good luck, Your Highnesses.
He turned and followed the crowd into the tunnels.
I have sent word to James,
Ken reported, as the messenger bird disappeared out the window.
Father, mother, good luck.
With that, Ken disappeared into the tunnels. Taking a deep breath, Durin raised his fist and roared,
May the gods watch over you, my people, my children!
His fist soared out and smashed into the ceiling. The tunnel shook for a moment as cracks spread out around the opening. Durin frowned as he waved his fist.
Blast this body, out of condition from mere months of rest. My dear, can you help me?
Nia smiled at him and raised her arm. Blue fire shot out from her hand into the many cracks. The heat spread the cracks until the entire entrance collapsed. She continued to release her flames until the rubble melted into a relatively solid form. The palace shook again as the wards signaled their impending failure. Queen Nia fingered her magic necklace, and the blue flames burned away her clothing. The flame molded itself into a beautiful set of armor around her body, while two flame bows materialized in her hands. Two additional arms made of flame sprouted from her back and drew back the bowstrings. King Durin laughed.
Ha ha! It's been a while since I've seen your flame empress regalia. Allow me to assist.
He held his sword out in front of him and circled the mana within his body. His skin turned gold as he reinforced it with body magic. It had been years since he last wielded this power, as physical augmentation reduced the wielder's lifespan. Durin, however, laughed as the rush of strength enveloped his body. Queen Nia smiled at her husband, and they waited together. They heard the door to the palace explode out, and soon the swarm of demons and fleshlings appeared in front of them. Queen Nia did not hesitate, unleashing a flurry of flame arrows from her bows. King Durin charged forward, his sword a blur, as he single-handedly held back the horde. The golden light of his body illuminated the bits and pieces of his foes that were sent flying back onto their allies. Flaming arrows fell all around him, igniting everything they touched and incinerating the demons.
"Just like old times,"
Durin bellowed happily, wave after wave of enemy falling to his sword. Around him, the flames had begun to catch along the room. He let out a battle cry and threw out his sword, a golden chain connecting it to him. It flew around him like a whip, slicing everything. A demon dodged and leapt for his head, but was killed by an arrow to the nose and launched backwards. Queen Nia's face did not change as her two flame bows released arrow after arrow without stopping. King Durin recalled his sword and roared,
"Who else wants to die?"
The demons hesitated at the sight of this mad human, while the fleshlings ran forward, unafraid of death. King Durin strolled ahead, unyielding as he massacred the fleshlings. However, he failed to notice a demon hiding in the ceiling. It fell, and its green tail stabbed through the protective golden light into his body. Durin reacted and sliced it in half before falling to his knee.
"Damnation! A greed demon prince!" he cursed.
The two halves of the demon reconnected and grinned evilly at him.
"I want to live. I want your life,"
it screamed at him, its body elongating into a green, stringy form.
"Michael!"
Queen Nia screamed as she turned her everlasting volley of arrows onto the envy demon. In response, a large gray demon leapt out and opened its mouth. It effortlessly devoured the flame arrows.
"Nine hells! A gluttony demon prince as well!"
King Durin cursed as he retreated. He could feel the injury starting to bleed his already weakened body dry. The greed demon licked its lips.
"Give it to me. I want that sword."
It lashed out with its tail, and Durin was unable to parry it as he was sent flying back into the wall. He coughed up blood as the golden light faded from his body. As the golden light vanished, the greed demon took out a demonic seal.
"Another perfect sacrifice,"
it hissed, scuttling toward the king's body.
"Rejoice, for your soul will soon be one of us."
Screaming in rage, Queen Nia ran forward, her bows transforming into four swords. The greed demon effortlessly moved aside as the gluttony demon inhaled. The blue flames were sucked off Nia's body and into the demon's mouth. It chewed the flames happily. Queen Nia stood in front of the king, defending him. She looked back at her husband, her lips drawn thin and jaw clenched tight in determined resolve. At the cost of her life force, she cast a spell. This time, white flames came into being around her, forming a construct in the shape of armor. The greed and gluttony demons screamed at the sight of the white flame, but were unable to run before the flames burst out in a wave of destruction. It passed through the horde and ignited the very air as it moved through the open doorway. When the shockwave ended, only Queen Nia was left at the start of a cone formed by the burned ground, the enemy gone. She collapsed, the magic necklace crumbling. With the last of her strength, Queen Nia dragged herself over to her fallen husband and cradled his head in her lap. She gazed up at the burning ceiling as it collapsed. Wordlessly, Queen Nia grabbed her husband's hand as the world collapsed around them. Feeling the hand in hers suddenly tighten, Nia turned to share her husband's gaze. They smiled at each other, and the queen pulled him into her embrace. They closed their eyes. The ceiling fell.
"No food again today. It has been many dungeon floor refreshes since food has come. The feeling I've learned to call hunger is starting to return to me. I can think better now, and no more words. I've learned eating just the top parts of food lets me think more. I don't know why. I still don't know a lot of things. Still, I know more than I once did. It's time to review everything I know again. I am a slime, a monster, whatever that is, that eats. From my eavesdropping sessions, serving as a chair to the pixie, I've picked up on the differences between things. Living things are either food or not food. Non-living things are always food, except for the glowing purple parts. I live in a dungeon, which is another monster. The dungeon is in charge with the flying pixie monster. I'm a part of the dungeon. Well, at least I used to be. I can cut myself away now, and from all the purple lights that the other slimes connect to. The dungeon can't control me when I'm not attached to the purple light. I'm in danger if I go for too long without it, however. If I stop eating the purple light and can't find any food, I get hungry. When I get hungry, I start to shrink. I let myself shrink all the way down to my solid part before to see what would happen. I didn't like feeling helpless. Also, if another slime finds me when I'm not connected to the purple light, it tries to eat me. I can eat it, but there are too many to eat when they swarm. Once I reconnect, they leave me alone again. I've been practicing what I've learned is called magic. I can still create the different orbs after copying the other slimes, but I can tell my magic is weaker than theirs. Even when I connect to the purple light, my magic doesn't get stronger. I don't know why I'm weaker. Still, I am very different. No other purple slime can cast magic, and no other slime can stop being part of the purple light. When I first cut the connection, I was worried the dungeon would notice. It doesn't, though, even when I cut the connection in front of it while I'm a chair for the pixie. Maybe I'm too weak for it to notice. Back to magic. I can't cast anything else besides the balls. It's like something is missing in me. I check myself, but the only things in me are my solid parts, and the new solid part that looks like a smaller version of my first solid part. It grows a little every time I eat food. Maybe I need to make this bigger. I can feel things now. The tremors in the ground tell me food is coming. My tremor sense has also increased. Now I can sense various objects and weak points in things. I can feel them. Two foods, both in armor and carrying the long pointy things called swords. I can hear them making noise to each other, but I can't understand them. One is making a loud honking noise. I believe it's called laughter. I scan the room I'm in. I'm on one of the floors after Large Brother Slime and before Hissing Brother Slime. Smaller hissing slimes are waiting on the walls for the foods. I'll let them attack first. Meanwhile, I climb up to the wall above the way they are coming. Few foods check this area after entering a room, especially when they are fighting hissing slimes. As expected, the two charge forward toward the hissing slimes when they find them. Jump, I think to myself. I leap off the wall toward the closer food. Oops! I almost died there, and that would be a shame to lose my progress. After all, I would no longer be me anymore if I reformed in the dungeon. These foods are smarter, it seems. They knew I was waiting to ambush them. Now they have their guards up while fighting the hissing slimes. What to do now? I can escape, but food has been rare lately. The hissing slimes will likely die soon from the swords. I want to eat the foods. That is most important. I throw magic balls at the two. They seem to be startled. One is making a lot of noise. Oh, he seems to be charging me now. That's not good. Well, for him, anyway. His sword is knocking away the magic balls I'm throwing at him, but he hasn't noticed my tentacle moving toward one of the hissing slimes. When he's about to reach me, I use the tentacle to throw the hissing slime at his back. He must turn his head to direct his sword to block the hissing slime. I don't hesitate and leap onto his leg, burying my way under his armor. He's screaming now, but my body is eating him as I travel up to eat my prize food. The other food can't help because all the hissing slimes are swarming him alone now. They won't take my prey until he dies. Ah, I've reached my food. It's nice when I pour myself into his opening so he stops making so much noise. Too much screaming messes with my ability to sense the world around me. His upper part tastes so good. Oh, yes, the sweetness. The savory taste of my food is wonderful. Oh, my food is an adventurer. I learned something new again. I also understand armor and weapons better now. Oops, can't get distracted. The other adventurer will be dying soon, and I can't let the hissing slimes eat his head. That's my part. I quickly scurry over and finish the adventurer off, forcing my slimy body down his throat. No more screaming now. That's a good adventurer. As I finish off my meal, something appears in front of me. I can understand what it says. Conditions for evolution met. Choose evolution path. Fire slime. Slime with the power of fire. Unlocks the fire slime evolution tree. Wind slime. Slime with the power of wind. Unlocks the wind slime evolution tree. Earth slime. Slime with the power of earth. Unlocks the earth slime evolution tree. Water slime. Slime with the power of water. Unlocks the water slime evolution tree. Gray slime. Slime that focuses on devouring adventurers. Unlocks the gray slime evolution tree. Herb slime. Slime with the power nature. Unlocks the herb slime evolution tree. Lesser mimic slime. Slime that focuses on improving their ability to copy their prey. Unlocks the lesser mimic slime evolution tree. Over slime. The next stage in slime life. Current stage. Child slime. Dungeon slime. Next stage. Adult slime. Dungeon over slime. The adventurer's head helps me to understand this. Monsters with cores strive to improve their cores in order to evolve into a higher being of monster. My slime brethren do the same, except with the dungeon interfering, they don't normally evolve on their own. It appears I am a more normal slime other than my second monster core growing inside me. My newfound intelligence tells me it is the reason for my ability to think, learn, and reason. Now, about these choices. They must have appeared because my intelligence has reached a level to understand it. This blue box is formed because of my connection to the dungeon. I've seen the dungeon gaze at something similar, formed from magic. My choices seem to be almost all of the slime families, except for the light and dark slimes. I don't want to go down a single path, though. The last option interests me the most, the over-slime evolution. Well, it's less of an evolution and more becoming a stronger version of myself. I like that idea. Staying me is most important after all. However, I'd better find a safe place to evolve. I don't want the dungeon finding out about my existence. Not yet, anyway. Still, I should name myself now that I know what a name is. I shall be Gretany.
Chapter 1. In a stone room, lit only by a large floating crystal in the center, a small pixie was flying around at top speed. With her black hair whipping in the wind as her purple dress fluttered about, the pixie was all smiles as she finally landed on her ledge.
"Come on, Doc, hurry up," Claire urged, taking her seat for the third time. "I missed Anodyne's first wandering boss fight, so I can't afford to miss this one."
The floating crystal glittered in purple light as it projected a low chuckle, followed by an image of a different place on one of its surfaces.
"All right, Claire," Doc, the dungeon crystal, laughed. "Here's the image. Sorry for the wait."
"Papa, we came too."
Doc and Claire turned happily as two large, wolf-like figures materialized from the floor. The Warg twins were their first outside monsters to join the dungeons. After losing their pack, they were now the adopted children of Doc and Claire.
"The more the merrier," Doc exclaimed.
Now keep it down. Anodyne's fight is about to start.
The four turned their attention to the image playing on Doc's crystal body, which showed another stonewalled location. The four were in the heart room, the very bottom floor of the dungeon Doc created. The crystal floating in the center of the room was the core of Doc's existence, while the underground labyrinth served as his outer shell he could control at will. With his legion of slime monsters created from his own magic, Doc truly was master of the dungeon. The image they were watching was on a floor higher up, the eighth floor specifically. The sixth through tenth floors were the jungle floors, as their ceiling and walls were covered in plant life. However, this room on the eighth floor was strangely devoid of plants. Four adventurers could be seen walking in. Two were human, while the other two were obviously not.
"I didn't think I'd see elves teaming up with humans," Doc observed. "I thought they didn't really get along these days."
"I guess they're trying to cooperate more now that things are starting to settle," Claire guessed. "Or maybe they were friends from before."
The four adventurers looked warily around as they entered the room. The lack of plants seemed to have unnerved them, and one of the elves was speaking rapidly to the other three.
"Too late," Doc announced gleefully,
the doorways closing before the adventurers could decide to leave. The two humans cried out and began beating on the door to no avail.
"We love this part, Papa,"
Isla and Aisha grinned wolfishly.
"The prey realizes there's no way out except to fight." "As one of the Fae, I'm not too interested in the despair of mortals, but I do enjoy watching them put up a good fight,"
Claire commented from above the wargs.
"Aren't elves also a type of Fae?" Doc asked curiously. "I think I've heard that before."
"Depends on the type of elf, though gnomes are more related to pixies than any elf is. But that is a lesson for another day. The fight is finally starting."
Back on the eighth floor, none of the adventurers noticed the blue goop starting to gather at the center of the roof. As the slime finished coming together, a humanoid head appeared and smiled down at the adventurers. With a quick swipe of a tentacle, the two torches were extinguished in the room. Darkness fell instantly, eliciting cries of fear from the adventurers. Anodyne, the slime on the ceiling, formed two tentacles and sent them down to opposite ends of the room. Under her control, the tentacles opened their mouths on the tips and began to release girlish giggles that echoed softly across the room.
"She's really mastered the art of unnerving adventurers," Claire observed. "Did you teach her that trick, girls?"
The twins nodded their furry heads proudly.
"We thought of the same trick, though we position ourselves at opposite ends of the room. Anodyne can do it better, though."
The human adventurers were clearly at wit's end as they swiped recklessly with their weapons at the darkness. Any time they came close to one of the tentacles, Anodyne effortlessly moved it out of the way, making sure it giggled near an ear as it passed. The elves were better off, though still quite nervous as they readied their bows and silver swords. Finally, one of the human adventurers calmed down enough to begin chanting fire magic. Anodyne quickly retracted her tentacles before the spell was complete. When it was, the small fire floated into the air and lit up the room. The adventurers quickly took stances, prepared for any attack. However, their quarry was nowhere to be found. Anodyne remained hidden on the ceiling, keeping her body as close to the stone as possible. After a few tense moments, the adventurers slowly crept backwards towards the middle of the room. Suddenly, one of the elves looked up and cried out in alarm. He pointed at Anodyne's slime body, which glistened against the stone backdrop.
"I guess the ambush is a failure," Doc chuckled.
Anodyne wasted no time in congealing into a ball and dropping down into the center of the room. She splashed on the ground, sending small droplets of her slime everywhere. The few that hit armor sizzled and burned as the adventurers hurriedly moved to wipe the drops away. A moment later, all the slime rushed back to the center as Anodyne's slime body took shape. What once looked like a small blue blob majestically morphed into a strangely beautiful woman. Her head possessed long, straight hair made of slime that covered her non-existent ears. Eye holes sat above a small, rounded nose and full lips. Even her body seemed to be made of the desires of men as it swayed back and forth, enchanting the adventurers before it. Claire nodded her head in satisfaction.
She's taken my lessons on seduction quite well indeed. So, she's mastered the fear and seduction arts of being a dungeon boss. That means all that's left is what you taught her, Doc.
She paused.
What did you teach her again?
Anodyne opened her eyes and smiled at the adventurers, before her mouth opened impossibly wide to the size of her entire body. Hardened slime teeth glistening, she screamed in battle lust as she surged forward.
I taught her how to devour, Doc announced proudly.
Claire and the twins rolled their eyes and sighed in amusement. What did they really think he was going to teach the new wandering boss? Anodyne's sudden attack caught the adventurers off guard, and before they could react, her mouth had enclosed around one of the human adventurers. The man screamed in horror as he struggled to swim out of her body, but he found his arms and legs were worthless in the attempt. Worse still, opening his mouth allowed for the corrosive slime to travel into his body. He was now slowly dissolving, both inside and out. The other human wailed and frantically swung his sword down onto Anodyne's body, trying to free his companion. Anodyne, annoyed but not hurt by the weapon, whipped out her arm and sent the adventurer flying into the wall. He moaned as he rolled down onto the floor and clutched his chest. The elves took advantage of Anodyne's distraction with the humans and separated, each moving to an opposite corner away from the slime girl. From there, they drew their bows and unleashed a barrage of silver arrows into her body. The arrows piercing her, Anodyne roared in pain.
You okay?
Doc asked through the telepathic link the dungeon family shared.
Just hearing your voice restores my strength, my lord,
Anodyne's loyal and perky voice echoed in the heart room a moment later.
These arrows are mere pebbles to my body.
Doc watched as an arrow destroyed one of Anodyne's tentacles quite easily.
Are you really sure about that?
Anodyne was quiet for a few moments as she focused on forming more tentacles to deal with the arrows.
To be quite honest, my lord, I must admit I was a bit foolish in devouring this invading fool in a single bite. I am unable to move as swiftly as before, and will stay as such until his body completely dissolves in me. He seems to have some sort of charm that is making it harder to eat him.
Doc glanced over at Claire.
Is that a new type of enchantment?
Claire nodded.
It's likely an item created to deal with acid traps. Slime acts like acid. In fact, many adventurer-made acids require crushed slime cores to manufacture. I doubt, however, that this was brought on purpose. Most adventurers I've seen could barely read a book, let alone understand the similarities between slime and acid. This one probably just brought along that charm to protect against acid traps.
Huh, that means I'm smarter than most adventurers, Doc declared delightedly. Watching through Rowan's eyes taught me to read. Also, I'd like to hear more about these acid traps.
Doc, Claire coughed, back to Anodyne?
Oh, right. Doc calmed down. Anodyne, are you sure you can deal with the arrows without support? I have enough reserved mana to create 2 backup slimes for you.
Thank you, my lord, but this is my redeeming battle. After that first failure, I underwent the lessons you and Lady Claire and the twins provided so I could become a strong wandering boss. I must redeem my honor here.
There she goes again with her macho honor, Claire muttered as she rolled her eyes. If she isn't swearing eternal loyalty, it's honor this and honor that.
Watch me, my lord,
Anodyne cried out. Using three tentacles, Anodyne layered and hardened them into a shield of solid slime. Creating two more, she used them to block the arrows as she moved toward the elves at walking speed. The elves, having seen that their arrows would have no more effect, stored them in their adventurer bags. They both knelt on the ground and began chanting.
Earth magic will not save you, not this time,
Anodyne screamed angrily, remembering the golem that had thwarted her during her first battle. In a fit of rage, she wound up her body into a coil and used the released force to throw her shields at one of the elves. The elf tried to move out of the way, but was knocked into the wall by one of the shields. Anodyne's tentacle pierced his skull a second later, killing him. The death of his companion caused the other elf to falter in his spellcasting. The delay caused a backlash of magic, blowing his arm off. The elf screamed in pain as he held his arm, only silenced when another tentacle whipped by and tore out his throat. Gurgling, the elf collapsed and died.
My lord, I pronounce my first victory,
Anodyne declared proudly over the bond.
Not quite, Doc disagreed. You still have one left.
The last human was sitting in shock as he stared at the dying bodies of the two elves. Liquid oozed out of his pants as his sword arm trembled and wavered.
My apologies, Anodyne declared solemnly. Please relax as I use this knave to take out my anger for presenting you with false information.
Taking on her beautiful appearance again, Anodyne smiled and carefully slid over to the crying man. The adventurer began to scream and throw at her whatever was closest to him. Stone and arrow entered her body, only to dissolve inside her amongst the bones of the other adventurer. That was now all that remained of that one, and they spread through her humanoid body until she looked like a walking skeleton dressed in slime. She smiled down at the adventurer, who dropped his sword and giggled as his eyes rolled into his head. A quick swipe later, and the magic fire that he had cast earlier was destroyed. As darkness fell, Anodyne giggled again. Chapter 2
Faster! Faster!
Fiora yelled as she whipped her reins again. The horse she was riding neighed along with her, as if aware that he needed to run faster than he ever had before. Fiora was leading a group of 30 riders, made up by the best adventurers and guards in the town. Their mission was to reach and escort the surviving refugees of Durin who had made it to the forest. That had been the original mission a day ago, anyway. Early that morning, however, a magic construct from Mage Guild Master Gannis had landed at their camp bearing urgent news. The refugees were under attack from Empire forces and needed help immediately. Luckily, Fiora and her party were mere hours away by normal speed. With the persistent urging of their riders and the enchanted wind magic from the few elves who had come along, the horses were flying through the trees along the path, as if gravity had no effect on their bodies. If this wasn't an emergency, Fiora would have taken the time to admire the scenery as it flew by her at normally impossible speeds. She could hear fighting in the closing distance, however, and thus urged her mount to move faster.
Men, Fiora shouted, prepare for battle! Save as many as you can! For Durin! For Durin!
The men and some women roared out from behind her. The trees suddenly disappeared as they rode into a forest clearing. Ahead, Fiora saw waves of refugees running toward them, their clothes ripped and tattered from fleeing. Every face seemed to be devoid of hope and filled with fear as they carried belongings and wounded.
At the end of the group, the few fighters were resisting a group of lesser demons and magic users, so the people could escape.
"Clear a path! Clear a path!"
Fiora cried out, raising her hand to let a stream of fire burst forth above the heads of the refugees. The sudden heat and cries of horses brought forth cheers from the people as they scrambled out of the way of the cavalry. Fiora drew her sword and let loose a battle cry while she fell upon the enemies. The magic blade glowed with flame as it mowed down the lesser demons, causing cries of pain and anguish as it slashed limb from body. Her fellow rescuers joined her in the charge, trampling everything in their path.
"Aim for the warlocks!"
Fiora heard an older voice cry out.
"The demons will disappear once their summoners are gone!"
Fiora quickly turned her horse to chase after the magic users who had begun to flee from her attack. Her right hand swung her sword, while her left hand released streams of flame on the warlocks. Horses trampled the rest. Demons began vanishing in loads as their masters were killed, and soon the battlefield was free of enemies. Fiora patted her horse's neck and trotted over to the surviving defenders amidst the cheers of the refugees. She dropped off her horse and saluted the man who seemed to be leading.
"B-rank adventurer Fiora reporting," Fiora announced with a salute, a bit more formal than she usually was.
"Are you Prince Kenneth?"
The prince winced as his men laughed at him.
"Fiora, please, be less formal with me. After all, we shared mentors for a time."
Fiora smiled sadly.
"As much as I'd like to, Prince Kenneth, protocol is one of the few things I can still rely on, with all that has happened."
She broke off silently. Ken nodded.
"You're right. I'm sorry."
He took a deep breath.
"Sir Prince Kenneth Durin of the House of Durin, Captain of the Royal Rangers, and current leader of these refugees reporting. I thank Adventurer Fiora and her men for their timely assistance."
His loud, booming voice carried through the clearing, once again raising cheers from the survivors. Fiora and Ken relaxed visibly and shook each other's hand.
"We've been worried," Fiora admitted. "Your brother had to be restrained from coming himself to save you."
Ken raised an eyebrow.
"That would have been interesting, considering James is not the strongest fighter. I'm surprised he even offered."
"It's a grim time right now," Fiora admitted. "The news of the attack was shocking enough, let alone the complete defeat of the entire country. Many in town are unwilling to accept that we might be the only safe haven left in the entire kingdom. The idea that we may be attacked again any day has everyone on edge."
Prince Ken nodded.
"I understand. I am still coming to terms with what happened myself. I think it's only my military training that's keeping me from breaking down. Else, I might actually do that once we reach safety."
"How are your sisters?"
Fiora lowered her voice to a whisper. Prince Ken shook his head.
"They were already broken up over Diana and Marcus's death. Now, with the king and queen gone," he shook his head, "neither has said a word since we began traveling through the forest. They're in the wagon with the supplies."
Only now did Fiora notice five large wagons being pulled along by deer with the refugees. Ken followed her gaze.
"The emergency tunnel led to a heavily forested area. Per a secret treaty with the elves of the forest, this path has been enchanted to never become overgrown, and for the deer to willingly allow themselves to be hooked to the wagons. There's enough food to feed half the city for a month as well."
"That's good, because harvest season just finished, and we won't be able to grow more food till next summer. As profitable as the slime dungeon is, it doesn't help when it comes to food. Rationing will let us survive for a few months at least."
Ken shook his head.
"These are things to be discussed later. Allow me to introduce to you Mage Gannis, while my men prepare everyone to move forward."
Fiora followed the prince over to an older man who was resting on one of the wagons. The elder raised his hand in greeting and offered her a weak smile.
"I'm pleased to finally meet you, Adventurer Fiora," Ganis said. "I've only heard good things about you from Master Mary's reports."
Fiora blinked. "You're the one who shouted about killing the warlocks."
"Aye, I am indeed," Ganis nodded. "I would have taken care of the deed myself, except I'm the only experienced mage here, and had to focus on casting defensive spells to counter their curses and hexes. Thank you for the help, by the way."
Fiora waved him off. "Think nothing of it, sir. I was merely doing my duty."
You've read reports on me from the Adventurers Guild?"
Ganis chuckled.
"I know what you're thinking. How did a Mage Guild representative get a hold of Adventurer Guild reports? Well, besides the limelight that fell on you following both attacks on your dungeon town, the Mage Guild has always pursued a high level of cooperation with the Adventurers Guild."
"I'm sorry to say, but there was a third attack," Fiora reported. "Luckily for us, we were able to contain it, but it was still a tragedy."
Ganis and Ken bowed their heads and muttered a quick prayer for the dead.
"Between Representative Ganis of the Council and my status as prince, we are all that exists for leadership here," Ken said. "What's the current situation in town?"
"Not great," Fiora admitted. "The attack shook things up for everyone, but the news of the fall of Durin and Nahatra has everyone concerned. The elves have completely moved into their conclave after fleeing their forest home, and some of the adventurers have taken to using the elves as an outlet for their fear and anger. The guards are hard-pressed keeping the peace. The priests are all massed in their head temple for prayer, and Father Jonas was entrusted with breaking the blockade and reaching help with the other countries."
"I hope he makes it," Ganis sighed. "The Empire has gone too far this time, using corruption magic and demonic sacrifice. In addition to the Church, this will ignite the ire of the guilds and countries."
Fiora nodded. "For the moment, our only hope is that Father Jonas makes it and brings reinforcements. Your provisions will help us wait out the months, but if we are attacked in force soon, we likely won't survive."
"Can't the elves help with food?" Ken asked.
"We cannot," an elf seemingly materialized next to Ken. "Our magic could, in theory, raise crops out of season, but this would destroy the fertility of the ground, and nothing would be able to grow for years. It would be against our nature to harm the land as such."
"Apologies, Leo. I forgot to call you over." Ken bowed his head.
Leo waved it off. "Do not fret, Commander. I understand. Adventurer Fiora, how is my cousin Gran?" "He lives and works hard as the elvish representative to the newly formed town council," Fiora said to Leo. "He is a dear friend to me." Leo smiled softly before turning back to Ken. "Commander, the men are almost done with their preparations. Shall I ready the convoy for departure?"
"Yes, Leo. We leave in 5 minutes," Ken ordered. "Fiora, I have to go now. We'll speak more later."
Ken left with Leo as they began to move the men into positions alongside the refugees. Ganis sighed quietly.
"He's come a long way. I only hope the burdens of command do not drive him into the ground. We need men like him."
"Indeed," Fiora agreed. "That also includes men like you as well."
Ganis glanced sideways at her.
"Oh, what makes you say that?"
Fiora turned to face him.
"I know about you, Mage Ganis. My mentor has had only good things to say about you before. If you are here, it's because some greater duty is carrying you than loyalty. Someone of your strength could have easily fled a long time ago."
Ganis did not speak as he watched the people prepare to move.
"I had planned to stay behind. King Durin ordered me to help save the people, so I shall. After that, perhaps I will leave and break the blockade,
or die trying. Everything I worked for is gone now, I suppose.
In that case, I have a proposition for you, Fiora stated bluntly. Gannis raised an eyebrow at the fiery-haired adventurer. Before the attack, we identified a boy with outstanding magic potential, but little control. In fact, he assisted in the attack and played a key role against the enemy. Master Mary originally had planned to send a letter to you requesting aid as a teacher for this boy before all this turmoil occurred.
Gannis rubbed his small beard. Where does the boy's talent lie?
Darkness and control, Fiora answered.
A necromancer? How interesting, Gannis mused. One who could raise armies of the dead would undoubtedly be useful during these troubling times. How old is he?
He claims to be 10, yet he holds a mature air at times. His story is that he's a war orphan.
Gannis frowned. I doubt that. It's more likely that he's a deep spy from the Empire. As we've seen, their methods are not merciful.
The test showed no signs of magical tampering beyond the normal dungeon magic that already pervades the town, Fiora continued. As to any more proof, there is none. As such, it's a gamble to see whether we can acquire his loyalty.
How high is his magic potential, then, for all this risk?
Right now, he holds the same amount of magic as a typical magus, Fiora explained. Gannis twitched visibly, and would have spat out his drink if he had one.
What?
Fiora nodded her head. I mean it. A 10-year-old boy has the same magic capacity as a magus. All he lacks is training, a guide, and control. His magic pathways are severely scrambled, typical for anyone without proper training, but he was still even able to create a ball of light that burned flesh.
Fine, I'll teach him, even if it could possibly be the wrong thing to do, Gannis agreed reluctantly, but with a flash of excitement in his eyes. I look forward to meeting this boy. What's his name?
His name is Rowan, Fiora said. Gannis stroked his beard and thought.
Well, you've attracted my attention. I will teach the boy for a time, and we shall see what happens after. If he fails to prove himself, I will go with my original plan and follow my liege.
With that said, Gannis walked back to the wagons to resume casting spells for the wounded.
Fiora! Hey, Fiora!
A perky voice called from behind her. Fiora turned to see a shorter woman running toward her. Frowning, Fiora crossed her arms as the newcomer stopped in front of her, breathing hard from the run. Hello, Annabelle, Fiora said cautiously. I see you were able to escape. The woman in front of her was small, a little over 5 feet in height, with glossy brown hair down her back and a beautiful smile. Her face, however, ruined any chance of making any impression beyond cute. Annabelle pouted as she beheld Fiora.
Hey, what's with that tone? Aren't you pleased an old friend survived? Come on, aren't you happy little Annie lived?
I haven't called you that in years. Or have you forgotten our last meeting? Fiora glared down at the smaller woman. Contrary to how she appeared and acted, a gleam of cunning and pride could be seen in Annabelle's eyes.
Oh, please, Fiora, she giggled cutely. Do you still have a little anger from the teeny little issue? It wasn't a big deal. We were kids, and you know how kids...
With startling agility, Annabelle dodged the slash from Fiora's sword and grinned at her. Fiora glared, the expression twisting her face. My life could have been completely ruined with what you three did to me, she hissed. I told you I would cut you down the next time I saw you. Annabelle wiggled her finger at Fiora.
You wouldn't cut down a poor young lady in front of all these people who just escaped a horrible fate, would you? Or is that red hair of yours driving you to chaos again?
As she inwardly scorned Annabelle, Fiora noticed the many eyes watching her from all around. The survivors were scrutinizing her warily, as if she could turn into an enemy at any moment. Reluctantly, Fiora stowed her blade.